Hello and welcome to Uncommon Law, my podcast about true stories from my life experience of over 50 years as a lawyer and trial judge. This is a look at the law from the inside out, stuff they don't teach in law school. This is Judge Rudy Greco, retired justice of the New York State Supreme Court. I first met Sherry. She was probably about 19 years old, working in a local takeout Chinese restaurant where her father was the chef. And you looked at her, and she was kind of chubby, very sweet face, and she wore these big, round, black eyeglass frames that made her look, and with her smile, they made her look like a benevolent and cuddly, friendly panda. She was a sweet, but she was always, I watched her. It was a good restaurant, and she would work the counter, take the cash, take the orders by phone and in person, wait on the tables, and her father would be in the back. He was the cook, and she had two slightly older brothers. They were probably in their early 20s at the time. They would help in the kitchen, and maybe sometimes with deliveries, and when they weren't arguing with one another and getting in the way. But Sherry was always focused. She was always cool, calm, and collected, and she always did everything, never got flustered, no matter how busy the place got. And the place got very busy, and there was a good reason why it got very busy. It started to be very, very successful. Word went around about the quality of the food. It was cuts above the usual Chinese takeout food that you can find anywhere in New York City, which is all good, but this was better than good. This was something special. And the reason was, I found out that her father, the chef, had worked at the best Chinese restaurant in New York City, was Shunli Palace, and it was owned by T.T. Wang. And T.T. Wang was a master Chinese chef and restaurateur, and he was the guy who single-handedly introduced Sichuan and Hunan cuisine to American restaurants and to Chinese-American restaurants and to the American public. So Papa would be cooking there, and as I said, the stuff was special. And I really appreciated it, and I made him know how much I appreciated it. And he didn't speak any English. I didn't speak any Chinese. But he knew about my admiration, and we liked each other. I think he found out that I had been I come from a working class background, and I got myself an education and have become a lawyer. And the Chinese revere learning and education, and he respected that, and I respected his ability. And in any event, the success of the restaurant eventually proved to be a problem, because now there was a demand for their work, and they were working long and hard hours to meet the demand. And the brothers were getting restless. All they wanted to do was go out and have fun. And the father was adamant that they stay there and help out, and this was his dream, you know, and he felt this was their future, but they didn't have that kind of foresight, and they didn't see that. Meanwhile, Sherry was always a dutiful daughter, and she hung on until the brothers quit the business and left them stranded because they couldn't get the help that they needed, and they couldn't afford the help that they needed. So they sold the business. And Sherry went about her business and eventually hooked up with a young man, another Chinese-American young fella, actually a Chinese guy, Roy, who was a very sweet, mild guy. And Pop went to work for another relative who opened up a restaurant in Manhattan. And I used to patronize that place. I used to go from Queens to Manhattan just to sample his cooking, you know, and he really appreciated that. And that lasted about a year. And I then found out that they were coming back to our neighborhood and opening a new restaurant. This time, Sherry had married Roy, and they had decided to open a business. And, of course, Pop was going to be the cook, and that was great. And things were going very, very well until disaster struck. And disaster struck in the form of a bad tragedy. Pop died in the kitchen of a heart attack. I mean, the guy was a working fool. He used to really, really work hard. And I guess he had a bad heart, and it killed him. Once again, they found themselves in a position of selling the business. And they did it Chinese style. They didn't ask me to help them or anything else. So they did the Chinese do business in their own way. And they got a Chinese lawyer, and they got Chinese buyers. And they had Chinese financing through either family or hometown slush funds that they use. And everything went okay. And then Sherry moved away, and I hadn't heard from him. I understand she and Roy went to California. He had trained to be a locksmith, and they were going to open up a business there. And I did get a couple of Christmas cards from Sherry over that period of time. And going back to the sale of the store, one thing they had to do that was not Chinese particularly, but it was conventional in New York, is they had at the closing to set aside and forward X amount of dollars to the New York City Department of Finance for unpaid and unassessed sales taxes. Since the last time they paid them like maybe semi-annually or quarterly. So this was earnest money so that the sales tax people had the money and they would assess the bill and then refund anything that was unused. But you had to overestimate so that they had enough money on hand. Sherry was always buttoned up. She was a bookkeeper at heart, and she knew, and she was up to date. And she said, no, I estimated we only owed about $500. But they insisted that we send the other side, the buyers, insisted that we send $3,000 just in case we were underestimating everything. So she says, I had to send $3,000 to the sales tax people. And usually the assessment would be made, and they would get their money back in 30 to 90 days, somewhere in between. That was pretty much the norm, depending on how much business or how complicated their business was or how much business the sales pack people were doing at that time, how many transfers they had to handle. Well, 2 years went by, and I got a phone call from Sherry, and she said she was very distressed. She says, I'm back in New York, and can I come and see you? It's important. I want to come to see you right away. I said, Jerry, it's 5 o'clock. Come right over. Are you nearby? She says, yes, I live right nearby. I'll come over. I'm upset. She said, this is a bad situation. I'll tell you when I get there. So she showed up at my office, and she explained to me about the selling the business and the taxes and the fact that now, 2 years later, she still hadn't gotten a refund or a determination about how much taxes she owed and how much money they were going to refund. And she had been chasing it down because she needed the money. She thought she was going to get maybe $2,500 back on that $3,000 deposit that she gave. And she said all she got was the runaround. She didn't use the term, but it was the old civil service okie-dokie. Oh, yeah, we're going to take care of it, take care of it. She finally pinned down and got the name of one guy at the tax office at finance, and she was dealing with the same guy, and he promised her that the whole thing would be resolved in 2 weeks. And he did that same promise four times over the course of that summer. And this was now late summer or early autumn when she came to me, and she still hadn't gotten the money. So the last encounter that she had with him was a day or two before she spoke to me, and she said to the guy in exasperation, what do I have to do to get my money? Do I have to bribe somebody? This is ridiculous. And the guy took offense at what she said and said, how dare you speak to me that way? And he hung up the phone, slammed the phone shut. That was in the morning. He called her back later that day after 5 o'clock. And this time his manner was totally different, which aroused her suspicion. She was a very sharp kid and a good observer of people. And he was all dripping honey, and he started to talk about her situation and how he couldn't talk earlier because that was working hours and he was in his office and he couldn't say what he really wanted to say. And he started alluding and talking around the fact of what she said about the bribe. And she caught on right away. She didn't say anything except to say, what I said to you earlier, I said because I was excited. I didn't mean it, and I apologize if I've offended you. I'm very sorry, because all I did was I just was saying it out of exasperation. I was disgusted and frustrated, and then so I just said that. She said, you know, but I didn't really mean it. Oh, no, 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 he said. He brushed that off. No, don't worry about that. That's not a big deal. He said, but I tell you. And he kept trying to get her to say something along the way of offering him a bribe, and she wouldn't do it. They were playing cat and mouse with each other on the conversation. Finally, he said to her, he came out and he said, you know what, this thing can be fixed up. He says, I think I could fix this up. He said, and I'm going to suggest something to you. It's up to you. You decide what you want to do. Come to the office tomorrow, Department of Finance, and wait outside at 9 o'clock when we open up. He says, I'll be there and I'll be dressed and wear whatever he said, something that distinguish him, a red shirt or something like that. I'll be outside and you can pick me out and bring with you $200. Bring you the $200 and I'm pretty sure we can resolve this thing almost immediately. And he says, but that's up to you. And they hung up and concluded the conversation. And I said to Sherry, Sherry, did you say anything about offering this guy a bribe? She said, no. She repeated the sequence of events. She said, no, I apologized, and I explained how I didn't want to. He said everything. He's talking about a bribe. I didn't talk about anything about a bribe. She said, I don't trust this guy. She said, but I made a decision to go there in the morning with $200 just to see what would happen. And maybe, you know, this was like China or Taiwan, and, you know, you had to actually bribe somebody to get the money. And maybe that explained the two-year delay. That's why I didn't. They were waiting for me to approach them and give them an opening to solicit, a bribe from me. She said, I didn't tell Roy because if I told Roy, he would worry and he might try to talk me out of it. And she says, I didn't say anything. I just got $200. And that morning, quietly, I went to the Department of Finance. She said, it was easy for him to pick her out, the tax agent, because she was Asian. He knew that from her last name and everything else. And he greeted her. He walked over to her. And without further ado, to use the cliche, he and two others took her into custody. And they took her by the arm and they said, you're under arrest for bribing a public official. Meanwhile, she didn't even offer the guy the $200, never gave him the money, never even offered him the money, never said or spoke about the money. They took her upstairs to an office where they surrounded her in the office, the three of them. They were tax agents. And they read her the riot act. You have bribed a public official. You're looking at 7 years in jail. It's very serious. Almost certain you're going to go to jail. It's a serious crime. Blah, 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 blah. And they really scared her. Or attempted to scare her, and then said, but there's only one hope for you, when they gave her that nonsense. And she said, well, what's that? Well, they said, do you own a restaurant? And she said, no, I don't own a restaurant, but my mother owns a restaurant in Queens. Oh, they said, well, that's good. You go home, and you talk to your mother. And we would like her to give us permission to wire up her restaurant, with hearing devices under some of the tables and some cameras. To record meetings with maybe corrupt officials and or tax evaders, corrupt people, business people trying to get out of the taxes or bribe other people. And if you do that, maybe we could talk to the judge and get him not to give you 7 years, you know, and they gave her that line of nonsense. They said, you come back and you let us know tomorrow. So she went back that afternoon, spoke to her mother. Her mother was reluctant until she heard about the 7 years. Then, just like Sherry, she got scared. 7 years. She said, well, I don't want to do this, but if it means you're getting out of jail for 7 years, okay. She said, what can we say? We have no choice. So then, on her way home, Sherry thought to call me, and she did. And she stopped by. She's that hurried phone call, and she was under a lot of pressure. And she said, can I come and talk to you? And I called her, and she relayed the whole sad story. And it was ugly. It was a real story of nonfeasance, malfeasance, entrapment. If she was telling the truth and that phone call was recorded, she didn't say anything that would incriminate her. The initiative for the bribery came from the public official, from the tax guy. And that would mean as a real defense for entrapment, because he initiated the idea. She didn't at all. So the next morning, I met Sherry, and we went back supposedly to reply to the tax people about the proposition of wiring up Mama's restaurant. And when they saw me show up with her, that was not what they expected. They treated me like smallpox, you know. They didn't want to see me and a lawyer. They wanted to take advantage of this kid with no advice or no counsel and put one over on her. They kept us waiting for an hour, which I expected. I've dealt with this before, and I dealt with these kinds of bureaucrats and this kind of administrative authority that goes awry any number of times. It wasn't my first rodeo, so I had a whole bag of tricks myself. I know how to deal with these guys as a defense lawyer. I loved it because they were inept, and they were stupid on top of it, and they were mean, so these were perfect targets for me. I couldn't wait to tangle with these characters. And they take us finally after an hour waiting. They took Sherry and I into a room, a conference room, and we're surrounded by seven people. There's the tax guy, two tax agents, two attorneys from the city, and two Department of Investigation personnel. And I look at them and I immediately start with my bag of tricks. I take out seven of my business cards and give them to each one of those people there. And I say, okay, now I'd like your cards back. Now, they're public. They want to operate in the shadows. They want to operate anonymously without names so they can deny everything. But I forced them They have to, you know, identify themselves if you ask them to identify themselves. And I gave them the cards, and I said, give me your cards. I know they all have cards. And I collected all of their cards. They were reluctant, but they did it. The next thing I did was to make a record. Now, usually, if I was really prepared and Sherry had money, I would go there with my own stenographer or at least a recording device. I didn't have anything, so I did the next best thing. I took out a nice legal yellow notepad and my pen, and I started writing all the names down in it. And I said, okay. And I didn't let them take charge of the conversation. I'm showing them I'm the boss here. I'm going to run the show. And they're seven. What are you seven doing here? This is a small Chinese restaurant, and there's been a delay. Did anybody investigate the delay for 2 years, why this money hasn't been refunded? Are any of you out there, you're busy with this mom-and-pop restaurant from Queens, when we have real estate developers that are walking off the tax rolls of New York City with multi-zillion-dollar property in Manhattan for 20 years, and you're not worried about that. Not only that, I believe you entrapped this young lady, and those of you that are lawyers are going to participate in entrapment, you're going to jeopardize your license. Not to mention, are you going to protect her and her mother if they have their restaurant wired up? You're not thinking about her or anything else, anything but yourselves, and it's totally out of line. I says, you're way, way out of whack, and you're trying to intimidate this person. So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to forget all your stupidity and all of this nonsense that you're pulling here, all right? And this attempt at browbeating this young woman who has no jail record and is perfectly clean and innocent, didn't do anything except look for her refund, which was due for 2 years, and not put this in the newspapers or get this publicity, and be kind to you in a way that you've never been kind to her. You get the refund right back to us and let us know that you're going to give her just refund after you take out the taxes, and we'll forget the thing, and we'll forget this ever happened. And on cue, I walked up, and I told Sherry before that, if I get up and walk out, you walk out with me. So she was very good, and boom, we walk out of the room, and they had their heads down. They wouldn't even look me in the eye, these people, and they didn't say anything when we walked out. I said, when you call me back and you let me know what you want to do. Well, never underestimate the stupidity of these people, or some people, and these were a bunch that were pretty stupid. A day later, they call, and they say, you have to surrender her. We're going to arrest her and prosecute this case for bribery. I said, you must be kidding. They said, no, we're not kidding. I said, okay. So I negotiated. It was, I think I heard maybe it was a Tuesday or something like that. And I negotiated to surrender her as early as I could. The earliest possible time I could do it was 9 o'clock in the morning when the tax office opened up. And it was the middle of the week, and I did that on purpose because processing and for arraignment and arrest in New York can take a long time. It can really be backed up, especially with somebody who's got a clean record like Sherry. After they photograph her and fingerprint her and send her records up to Albany for confirmation in the computer system, if it comes back negative that she has no other charges, they send it back again for reconfirmation because they don't know if it's the right person or it's just a mistake in the input of information. Anybody with a long criminal record is easy to identify because you know all of their arrests, and you tell them, weren't you arrested for this and weren't you arrested for that and were you convicted for this? And they say yes, and they immediately match up the records. It's no problem. But this could take time. And I had picked up Sherry. I arranged to pick her up at home. I said, I'll pick you up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'll never forget the scene because I went to pick her up at her house, a little one-family house. And there was Roy at the front door with their son, Leo, who was 3. And Sherry kissed him and kissed Roy and then just looked at me and said, let's go. And she was determined. She wasn't shook up at all. Now, you know, it's a daunting process to go and get yourself arrested and arraigned and go through the court system. And I know wise guys and tough guys that get shook up by the idea. Well, she wasn't shook at all. She was cool, calm, and collected. And she said, don't worry. I said, Sherry, on the way in the car, I said, look, I'm going to try to get you in and out. I did this at this time. I scheduled it at this time to do as fast as we possibly can. But it takes a long time sometimes, depending on what's going into Albany from around the state. And it could even be a day or two that you might be in jail before you get to see a judge. I'm hoping to beat the clock and do this sometime later tonight. It's a long day, and hopefully we can get it done maybe for night court. She said, don't worry, whatever you have to do. She's encouraging me and calming me down. I'm worried about her, but she's cool. We get to surrender her, and thank God for the New York City Police Department, who are 99 and 44, 100% good and sensible people and experienced people, and they can discriminate. They know bad people from good people. They're very good at it. And I explained to them that this was a young housewife and this was a tax, crappy tax thing that had no bearing on anything, probable entrapment and everything else. And I didn't want this girl, who's a mother and a housewife, a young kid, to be circulated among the usual denizens of the deep that hang out in the back of the courtrooms, in the holding pens, the prostitutes, the druggies, the drug dealers, the petty thieves, what have you, the criminals. And I said, please, all right, and think of your own families, and if this was your wife or your daughter, who was a clean kid, get her through the system, put her right at the top of every stack of paper, and get her through as fast as we can. I had a lot of goodwill with the police department, and they immediately caught on, and they sized up Sherry for what she was, a clean kid. And to their credit, they did. And they ventured a guess. I asked them, because they have experience. I said, the way traffic is now, how long do you think this will take? They said, we'll process her as fast as we can. She should be able to make night court maybe by 9 o'clock or a little bit after 9 o'clock tonight if things hold up and there's no glitches. I said, okay, fine. And I told that to Sherry. And she said, fine. And they took her away and they photographed her and kept her in custody, but they segregated her. They kept her in an office. They kept her away from the jailbirds and everything else. And I immediately made a phone call to a friend of mine, Jimmy Breslin, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter and columnist for the Daily News. And Jimmy is a decent guy. He's always got an ear for a good case. And he has to meet a regular deadline. There's always pressure to get good material for his column. And he was always looking for good material. And I thought this was suitable and this would be a good story because there was a real injustice going on here. And I left a message on his answering machine. He called back my office. This is the days before cell phones. And he said, I told him come around 9 o'clock if he could. And he said he would be there. And at 9 o'clock that night, she wasn't ready to be arraigned. And I had spread the rumor among the court officers and the correction officers in the courtroom. I said, you know, Jimmy Breslin's coming to cover the story of, I got a client back there that's going to come through the system. Sherry, Asian kid, Chinese American kid. And I said, Jimmy Breslin's going to come and cover the story because it's a real real nasty piece of work. So I knew they would tell the judge. And the judge has discretion in night court that starts at 6 o'clock. He has the discretion to close the court for the night whenever he feels like it, whenever he feels there's enough cases been heard and nothing else is coming through the pipeline. And it turns out she wasn't ready at 9 o'clock, but the judge had gotten the story, and she was finally arraigned at 12 o'clock. Meanwhile, at 9 o'clock, Jimmy and his wife, Ronnie Eldridge, who was a city councilwoman from the Upper West Side and a fabulous person, showed up. They had been in Kew Gardens all day in Queens looking at a trial of a young woman who was a battered wife, and she was on trial for murdering her husband, who battered her and beat her mercilessly for years and years and years. That's the kind of people they were. You know, they bore witness to these things. And I'm sure Jimmy was looking for a story as well. So when he arrived, we had hot dogs at 9 o'clock at night outside the Center Street Criminal Courts at 100 Center Street. And he said, Rudy, he said, I'm here. He said, but I want to talk to this gal. What happened? And I want to talk to her to verify for myself so that I don't want to end up writing about and championing a cause that isn't a real cause, you know, that's not legitimate. He said, so if you don't mind, can I talk to her? I said, sure, we'll get her out and you can talk to her to your heart's content. She's the real thing, Jimmy. I said, she's really been shafted. So finally, she shows up at 12 o'clock or a little bit after 12 o'clock. She's arraigned, and the judge releases her in her own recognizance in recognition of the nonviolent crime and her clean record. And we're going home, and I said, Jimmy, I'll drive you and Ronnie back. They lived on the west side in her district, in Ronnie's district. I said, uptown. I said, I'll drive you guys home. He said, I'll sit in the back seat. Sherry, sit with me. I want to talk to you. She said, sure. And he questioned her, and Ronnie and I had our own discussion in the front seat all the way up to the west side until we got there. And then when we arrived, Jimmy said he got out of the car and he said, Rudy, can I talk to you? And he pulled me aside out of earshot. I said, yeah, what is it? He says, well, I'm going to tell you, this kid is the real thing. She's 100% sincere. She's telling the truth. I know it. I asked her the same stuff three times and she was totally consistent all the time. And he said, she's got the heart of a lion, this kid. He says, I think she's got some character. She's getting shafted. I think this kid, with her character, I can't believe how strong she is. She's capable of pulling a trigger. Not that she'd want to pull a trigger, but if she had to pull a trigger, she would do it. She's capable of it. She's something else. He says, I'm impressed. He says, I got a deadline. I got to run. Let's not talk. Let me go upstairs and write this thing and send it into the news so they could put it in tomorrow's paper. I said, Jimmy, that's great news. He said, you read the paper in the morning. I'll write about it. I says, yeah, but you got to do me one favor. I says, here's a list of the 7 people that were in that room, the lawyers and the investigators and the tax people and everything. These are all of these dopes that tried to put this all over on this kid. I says, you got to publish these names. He says, you got it. I'll write the column. Let me see what I can do. Next morning, true to form, the column comes out and it's incriminating. And there are the 7 names. God bless him. He put all 7 names he published. And it wasn't 2 hours later that I got a phone call from the Manhattan DA's office. And they said, Counselor, we're calling you about that case of Sherry such and such. And I said, yeah. They said, well, we're going to drop the case. I said, well, what about the money? She'll have the money within 7 days, 5 business days, maybe 7 days. He said, she'll have the money, her refund. They'll take out the tax that she owes, which is, we understand it's not that much. And she can have the refund. Is that all right with you? You don't even have to come in. I said, that's fine. So I told Sherry, and she got her money, and the case was over, and it was very, very happy. But there's a postscript to the whole story. A couple of years later, Jimmy Breslin himself got into trouble at his then-employer, Newsday newspaper, because he got into an altercation with a young Korean-American female reporter who was disrespectful, and he shouted at her, and in the heat of the argument, he used a racial epithet. And they called him up on the carpet, and he said, Rudy, I need a favor. He said, if you can write a letter to the editor explaining that I stood up for your Asian-American female client some years ago, he said, that would go a long way to help me out. I says, you got it. I'll send it. I'll fax it right away. Just give me the address and where I can send it. He says, sure. Sure enough, I did it right away, faxed it right away, and it was printed next day in the paper, and Jimmy got off with a slap on the wrist, a nominal suspension of about 2 days or 3 days or something like that. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a good example. Who says you can't fight City Hall? Sherry did it, and with a steely character, went on to be a surgical nurse at a New York City hospital in Queens, where she served a whole career with great merit. Thanks for listening. Come back next week for another episode of Uncommon Law, Lessons They Don't Teach in Law School. I'm Judge Rudy Greco. Court is adjourned.